Hello again, this is Health and Happiness on KGVM 95.9 FM and online at kgvm.org. This is a program, a weekly program in which we talk about issues of physical, mental, emotional health. We have guests, and we're looking forward in a few minutes on having a very important guest tonight to talk about an issue that she will introduce. I am co-host with Dr. Suzanne Wood, who's a speech-language pathologist. I'm a psychologist. And this program is underwritten in part by contributions to the Public Education Committee of the Montana Psychological Association. But first, we're going to add a bit of new material to the program this evening. I'm going to start out each week talking about a research article, something of current interest, before we get around to the main guest. Even today, I found a news article about mental health issues, in particular suicide, which said that 450 farmers killed themselves across nine states in the years 2014-2018. You know, we've spoken on this program about suicide with several professionals, either locally, state, and nationally. And we've discussed the prevalence, particularly in Montana, which leads the country or is near the top in suicides among its population. That includes veterans, teens, those with gender differences, non-white groups. But there are resources available, and we'll give you those numbers as we go to the next part of this program. Briefly, the reasons for farmers' suicides are enormous debt, climate change, government policy, which appears to be vacillating, the tariff issue, and then the bailouts. And you can say, well, bailouts would replace the income, but farmers don't like that because they have pride, and even though it helps them, that doesn't help them in the long run, most of them say. But anyway, on a positive note, there is help. And one of them is, in fact, our local group called HELP. You can dial 211 if you have an issue of mental health, particularly if you feel very depressed, you have thoughts of suicide, please call that number. It's also available for other mental health reasons. There's a national suicide hotline, 1-800-273-8255. And let me say both of those again. The local help center, dial 211, or the National Suicide Prevention Line, 1-800-273-8255. Now we're moving to the topic of the evening. And Dr. Suzanne Wood, the co-host, will now introduce our guest.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. We have with us tonight Amy Sprigg. She works at 406 Periodontics as a registered dental hygienist who has added coaching about nutrition to her absolutely wonderful schedule of duties that she provides for the citizens of our city. And I'm sitting here looking at Amy, and since we're going to be talking a lot about nutrition tonight, and it's the impact that inflammation has on our bodies and our minds and our spirits, I just want to point out that Amy is one of the healthiest looking specimens I have seen for a while. And she obviously practices what she preaches. She's just the absolute picture of good health. And so I think that we're really fortunate to have you with us to discuss some things that really could affect the community out there. And so the topic tonight is inflammation. Now, we all know about acute inflammation. You get a little cut and it might swell up and get a little sore, and that's acute. But chronic is when all of those side effects from the wound don't go away. So it occurs when your immune system gets set perfectly, permanently to on. And we need that response when we have a wound or something going in on that our body needs to fight. But if it gets permanently set upon on, it's like a forest fire, Amy pointed out, that never goes out and releases a flood of damaging chemicals from your body that could sicken your cells. So there are lots of different ways to describe chronic inflammation, but Amy says, I love this one because really, do you want a forest fire in your body that never goes out? So Amy, tell us how to put out the forest fire.
Well, that's a very broad question to start. So I talk a lot about nutritionally what we can do to decrease some of that chronic inflammation, but there's definitely factors that go beyond. It's lifestyle, nutrition, social, mental health, sleep, all sorts of stuff that play factors in this. So my biggest takeaway for people is just trying to get off of processed foods, eating more whole foods, and over time that will hopefully eliminate that chronic inflammation or at least control it so that these diseases, and I think there's a whole list of diseases, Alzheimer's, diabetes, heart disease, cancer,
arthritis, yeah, atherosclerosis, Crohn's disease, colitis, dermatitis, IBS or irritable bowel syndrome, Parkinson's, lupus, diabetes, obesity. And there's a real connection to obesity and inflammation that's interesting. It's a serious, huge issue.
And I think that if we spent more time focusing on how to get rid of this inflammation and having people recognize the signs and then have the education and the tools to correct that, I think that we would be in a much better boat altogether.
Well, and Miss Amy's pointed out that she often reads labels on jars to figure out, in cans and packaging, to see what's actually in there. And I know I read about one person working with research in inflammation who even created an index and felt that packaging and cans and bottles, etc., should have the information about the inflammatory index that might be spurring some of these chronic illnesses that so many people have in America right now.
Yeah, oh man, how much would they hate that if there was an inflammatory index on all of these products that they're putting out. But yeah, you bring up a great point, and I think it's one of the biggest takeaways that most of the clients that I work with have is they never looked at labels. They never knew what to look for, because how many times do you walk down the organic, natural section and it's gluten-free, organic cookies, and so they're healthy, right?
Well, sure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I should eat the whole box. So then you turn around and I try to teach people how to look at the label and how to see, okay, like the first ingredient is brown rice syrup. What is brown rice syrup?
Sugar.
Exactly. Do you know how many names sugar has? Probably 200. I recently was continuing education class, and it was actually dental-based, but the lady put up on the screen all of the different names for sugar, and this is kind of a little side tangent, but fun fact, on an ingredient label, it's listed by weight. So the first ingredient is what it has the most of in it.
By weight.
Yep. So if the first ingredient, hopefully it's not sugar, but if the first ingredient is sugar, that means it has the most. So what food companies are starting to do is adding different types of sweeteners. So they'll have brown rice syrup, they'll have dextrose, they'll have fructose, whatever they can call it, whatever they can label it as. They'll put numerous sweeteners in it so it goes at the end of the label so that we think that there's not as much of it.
Just a marketing manipulation.
Yes. So. And we know it.
Like,
exactly. But we're hurting everybody. And
in all the research I've read about inflammation, there's just a highly criminal element every time we get to the sugar and what it does to us and what it doesn't do for us, and in terms of not just inflammation, but other things as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I need to throw in that one of the biggest disease issues in America, of course, is diabetes, yeah. And that is a sugar issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, it's such a hot topic, and this is actually, this comes up in an article that I wrote, but everybody wants to say, oh, it's genetic, and my mother had it, and it's, I was just going to get it anyways. And I don't disagree that there is a genetic component to it, but they're starting to study these genetics more, and they're starting to realize that some of these inflammatory triggers are actually basically turning on the genes that would trigger the diabetes or whatever disease process it is. And so they're kind of like, hey guys, your genetics is not as set in stone. Like, you can change your genetic destiny to an extent. So that's, you know...
That's valuable, pure gold kind of information.
Yeah, and it's...
So by observing healthy lifestyle parameters, you don't have to follow in the same path as your grandmother and your mother, etc.
I always liked in mental health, I always liked the formula about mental health when it shows itself, maybe schizophrenia in the ages of 21, maybe through 28 primarily, but there's the primary factor, which is genetic. But that may be in a lot of us. Then there oftentimes is a predisposing factor, which might be that a child, it was a very dysfunctional home the child grew up in, and therefore a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress. But then put that together, and then there's a catastrophic event, if you will, something, a trauma to the person that precipitates the show of it. And then the final one is the reinforcing factor. What keeps it going after it presents itself? And I think that, to me, when you said the gene that can be triggered by a bad lifestyle or something one eats often could get that whole formula going, you know.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how much, and the some of the conditions and the diseases that we've talked about so far, that's scratching the surface.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as the years go on, we're going to learn so much more about what inflammation is really linked to. And I hope that we can start implementing things at a younger age for people and educating them and just
nipping it. Well, for instance, 50% of Americans right now are scheduled as obese. And what some of the information I've been reading says that obesity triggers a cascade of inflammation that leads to metabolic conditions such as insulin resistance. So we're heading right on into diabetes then. And I don't know how to pronounce her name, but a Dr. Lee from the Lerner Research Institute recently discovered a protein that helps coordinate that inflammatory cascade. And so they're saying you could reduce inflammation and not trigger, which goes right along with what you're saying there. And unfortunately for many of us, we need to think about these things: smoking, obesity, chronic stress, and drinking alcohol excessively are some major contributors.
Nelsum, the American lifestyle, you just said it right there.
Standard American.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news for so many of us. Here I'm talking about sugar, alcohol, being overweight,
stuff,
that we all need to struggle with. So,
the plaques that are developed because of however inflammation occurs, we know that shows up in any number of ways in the body.
Yeah, they have been in the heart and the brain linked to Alzheimer's, tons of heart disease, obviously. And yeah, this kind of gets into the whole like fat debate. Is it the fat that's really the issue, or is it the sugar and all the processed foods that we're eating that in turn cause inflammation in our bodies that then kind of make things clog, more or less.
Yes.
So, and
they're an irritant that allows things to settle in and clog up.
Yeah. Well, and it is interesting, just because you kind of made a point for me to perfectly tie in my dental background as well. Because heart disease and periodontal disease, gum disease, are so highly linked, and actually diabetes too. So it's funny because we're talking about nutrition and
people probably chronic. Think, how can teeth be related to this?
Oh, and I get it. Yeah. I get it so much. And I just want people, I want people to understand that as a hygienist, when I see you and I'm telling you there's a lot of inflammation in your mouth, there's a lot of bleeding, whatever's going on, it's not just your mouth. That has access to your whole body. So the bacteria, they've linked the bacteria in periodontal disease with the same bacteria in Alzheimer's and everything. Same thing with heart disease. Some other stuff I don't even want to get into talking about that would have you guys running for floss. But yeah, it's all tied together. So we have to stop compartmentalizing how we treat everything. And we have to stop thinking, oh, I'm going to my dentist just for my mouth, which, yes, primarily that's what the dentist does, but we also see a lot of things in your mouth, and I tell patients all the time, I'm like, please go have blood work done. Tell your doctor that this is what your hygienist said, and please go get checked out, because this could be something else. So I think that we just need to really piece the puzzle together. Our heart is connected to our mouth. Our brain is connected to our mouth and our heart. Our organs, everything's connected. It's not one thing or the other.
Just the simple act of swallowing. I'm a speech language pathologist, and I work with the rehab team with swallowing patients primarily. And we're trained to know that if the teeth are not kept clean and in order and all of the good things that we know we should be doing daily, more than once, colonies of bacteria build up. In working with people in medical settings, it's easy to let the teeth not be a focus of the usual hygiene that we might do. And when we let that go, those colonies of bacteria via osmosis head right down into our lungs, so we see a significant increase in pneumonia. And that just shows you one aspect of how these little critters that we're not attending to in our dental hygiene can foul us up majorly.
Just listening as a person who knows, let's say I know a little bit, but let's say I know less than I know, listening, you think, well, okay, well, why don't you just take an anti-inflammatory? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, first off, I'm not a drug person and at all. I'll be sick and people are like, just take something.
Yeah.
And I don't like to. I like to let my body go through the process. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure, anti-inflammatories are great and they have some great benefits when needed. But long term, they really tear your body up. I mean, they're really hard on your stomach.
Yeah.
And I know, please don't stop taking your anti-inflammatories out there if you need them.
Right.
But I always look for another way to maybe reduce the inflammation instead of just popping a pill.
And that's along the lines of the research that I was reading, that they're very helpful if you have a pain, whatever, but then to ease back off because of the long-term effects, the side effects. And even those who are on anti-inflammatories long-term know that they have to guard against some of those side effects.
So my guess is it'd be for the that first level mentioned is that for the acute things that, that happens, that you can use anti-inflammatories to help with that. But if you have something chronic going on, you need it all the time. Obviously, there's something else wrong.
Yeah, well, and I don't think ibuprofen.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to touch, your autoimmune
disease. Alzheimer's.
Yeah, exactly. Keep taking that ibuprofen. No.
No.
Yeah, it doesn't even...
Over time, it can be deleterious, taking too much of it too long.
I was thinking, is there if we had to say, none of us is perfect or has a perfect lifestyle, but across the areas we always hear about on health programs, you mentioned several of them, I think we might have mentioned all of them, but it's like diet, exercise, stress issues, What else?
Sleep.
Sleep. We've had some sleep experts on the program. And that's amazing. In fact, we have a local doctor of sociology and education too, Jesse Holton. He's a policeman. He's also deals with PTSD and the first responders. And he has talked about what lack of disturbance in sleep because of his PTSD, what it did to him physically. It's actually damaged his heart valves, and cortisol issues that come up because he was always getting interrupted by his dreams and nightmares that just jumped up. And then I'm a person who has sleep apnea, obstructive sleep, I have for the last almost year I've had the CPAP machine, and Suzanne is a witness, of course. We sleep in the same bed. She tried to escape a few times to get away from the sounds, but apparently for the last 30 years, I've had that. I had a CPAP 30 years ago, and I basically threw it away after the first 2 days, and then stuck to my side. Apparently that didn't make as much difference as I thought it did. But she can tell you that my sleep is much better. I can tell you I feel much better. But you might comment on that.
Especially well, as a it went from 65 decibels to, is he alive? Is he breathing? I couldn't sleep for several nights initially because I kept wondering, you know, making sure he
when was... I got quiet with the CPAP.
Yeah, we went from 65 decibels loud to, I can't hear a thing.
He
and
died.
So, but the sleep is very, extremely helpful. And I do want to point out for Dr. Holton, he was talking about Jesse, something interesting, just so we get the rest of the story. He was given a therapy dog that learned to wake him by licking his face when he saw the rapid eye movements.
Oh.
And so he was able to turn that around and not have long-term heart damage. But it was getting to the point, he's told us, that it was that difficult, but he's helping many others and has a program because sleep is essential to all of us.
Well, and it's we actually deal with a lot of sleep. We see a lot of obstructive sleep disorders in dentistry.
Yes.
And I have gone to a ton of continuing education on those topics, and they're becoming just bigger and bigger in dentistry. And I tell patients a lot, have you had a sleep study?
Mm-hmm.
Do you wake up gasping? Do you, even like things like acid reflux, it's stuff that you wouldn't even think can be tied back to it. And I think people just brush it off. They think it's like,
I did.
And I'm like, probably, you know, people don't wake up.
I should have known
literally
better.
Like they don't wake up from stuff like this.
In fact, it's called, what is it? Apnea, hypopnea, intervals. And I have a little MyAir app.
That
says how many you had per hour. I was having apparently 50 or 60 per hour that I wasn't aware of, except maybe I didn't feel rested the next day.
Yeah.
But now they're down 5 and below, usually 2 and below.
That's great. And it's that you pointed out, you're like, I didn't, you know, just didn't feel good the next day, didn't feel well rested. And this goes back to nutrition and stuff too. People don't realize that they feel bad until they feel good. You know, and I used to work for a dentist who did tons of treatment on obstructive sleep disorders, which again, super controversial today.
Yeah.
but he helped a lot of patients, and people were like, I didn't realize that I didn't feel good, but you'll have problems with weight loss. You'll have all sorts of
issues.
Was
it bruxism, the grinding of the teeth that goes?
Oh, there's like a whole nother rabbit hole. Yeah, because like, I mean, if you're grinding your teeth, a lot of the thought is that you're trying to get your airway open so that you can breathe. So a lot of people will grind their teeth to get their jaw in a position to where their airway is not obstructed.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see people who breathe through their mouths all the time. And that's a huge, you know, like we'll send them to speech therapy to try to just get some patterns. And I even tell people, which I get really weird looks, but I have people tape their lips shut at night because you get way less oxygen when you breathe through your mouth versus your nose.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about kids that are doing this,
oh, really?
Like they're underdeveloped.
Mouth breathing has so many side effects that are harmful.
Talk yeah. about inflammation. That's, yeah.
Yeah, all this is tied together.
Yeah, and that's my point.
But a healthy lifestyle. We have stress issue, sleep issues, diet issues, exercise issues, maybe spiritual issues. Have a lot of them all tied together.
Yeah, they're so intertwined. And like I said, stress and sleep are two really big ones that I think mm-hmm. people discount a lot. But mm-hmm. you had brought it up, stress and your cortisol levels being mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. high. And that has been scientifically proven to give people heart disease and yeah. young deaths.
Yeah.
So stress management, and I work with, actually, a lot of times I work with clients nutritionally who I refer to somebody else.
Mental health worker.
Yes, mm-hmm. because I'm like, you know, you've got to figure out some management mm-hmm. stuff, and I know mm-hmm. my line.
Yeah.
But stress management's huge.
So valid referrals, and...
Yeah.
And thank you for having that global approach to your patients and clients. And
yeah, I like to refer people. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you have somebody who has a ton of these chronic inflammatory diseases, I'm like, I know that I can help you make healthier choices, but I will refer people who have a lot of diseases to mm-hmm. a dietitian, because at the end of the day, medically, I'm like, they might be better off with mm-hmm. a dietitian instead of a nutrition coach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was reading something from the CDC that when you have acute inflammation, pain, redness, or swelling because you've had an injury, that's one thing. But what are the symptoms of chronic inflammation? How would our audience know that they have it? And I know one of the researchers I read about actually does a blood test. So,
yeah, there's definitely, that's a tough one, because like we were just saying, you don't realize that you don't feel good until mm-hmm. you feel good and realize how bad you felt. So that is a really tough one. I think potentially having a lot of GI issues, stuff like that, people that complain of just never being comfortable, anything like that, potentially... chronic inflammation.
My first thought is, and this is not my specialty, but you probably don't know it.
No.
Yeah. The common symptoms in this study were fatigue, fever, mouth sores, rashes, abdominal pain, and chest pain could be some of the signals you might have chronic inflammation. And that could be from mild to severe and last for several months. Or several years.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that list probably goes on for 100 more pages.
Oh yeah, because
like I said, all these diseases really come back to inflammation, and so they could manifest as anything. But mm-hmm. I'm a big go get your blood work once a year. You are not healthy unless your doctor tells you you are. Mm-hmm. And I have so many people that haven't had blood work done, haven't seen their physician, and don't get me wrong, I don't always agree with what they have to tell me,
yeah.
but I go get the blood work done, and even for me, being somebody who eats healthy and exercises and stuff, I've had some funny stuff on my blood work before that I'm like, oh, this is pretty
okay.
interesting, so
let me do something about that.
Exactly, yeah. or like, let's mm-hmm. look into this more. So, mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. if there's, just have yearly blood work done.
We had a very interesting one. Suzanne, the co-host here, really pays attention to health issues. And drinking a lot of water is one of them. However, in one of her recent tests about a year ago, she was drinking so much water, it showed up in the blood work, like, you're going to have to drink less water. I wouldn't suggest that to anybody out there. Mm-hmm. I think it's called osmolality, O-S-M-A-L-I-T-Y.
Yeah, my potassium levels dropped.
Oh, yeah.
But it was summertime, and I was running 2-3, 5 miles, and doing a lot of exercise, and the doctor called me up the next day. The nurse called and said, you know, I just saw your report. You're going to have to back off on drinking large glasses of water.
We suggest that's it. Probably it's not a problem with anybody else out there.
The doctor called back and said, I want to amend that to say that I know you run and you're real active. She's been our doctor since we've been here. And so just cut back some.
No.
And keep drinking lots.
How many times you ever hear that?
Never.
Drink less water.
Do you know how much you were drinking? Do you have any idea?
She was drinking water all the time.
Because I knew that it was supposedly just the very best thing in the world, I would get like a 32-ounce, and I might, in the course of 20 minutes, drink the whole thing. And I might do that several times a day.
Yeah.
And so, literally, I just overdid it. And you can overdo water and hydration, evidently. But you see, my blood test is what cued me.
Yeah.
That I was getting out of skew, and I corrected that.
That's a good point. You had said before, while we were talking before the program began, that everything is also to be individualized. For example, we're told to eat all the right foods. Of course, in my occupation as a psychologist, over the years, I've had to deal with people who ate far less than they should have and became anorexic or bulimic or any of those eating disorders. But this rare, like drinking too much water is rare. So there is some obvious judgment, training, therapy if you need it, to regulate what we do with these things.
Yeah, so it's funny that you... not funny that you bring up eating disorders, but kind of all of our diet trends now, and I don't know if this is the direction you were going, but all of our diet trends now have unfortunately created a lot of disordered eating.
Yes.
Habits is kind of what they're terming them now. Mm-hmm. And that's actually something that whenever I give seminars before a challenge or something, I bring that up and I'm like, hey guys, I don't want you to develop any unhealthy patterns, because it is really easy when we start looking at everything that we're eating and we start labeling foods as good and bad and I shouldn't eat this, and you know, it, you have to be really careful there. And for the longest time everybody was like, oh well, my cheat meal, you know, and I'm like, no, like, let's not call it a cheat meal. You're not doing anything wrong. You're enjoying your evening out, whatever the case may be. But it's a fine line between struggling with some of those eating disorders. Yeah.
So kind of are you saying that once a week going and eating French fries isn't so bad?
Or Thanksgiving, you're going to not eat some pecan pie.
I think that there's a huge mental health aspect to living your life.
Yes.
And socially for us, food is a huge part of that. So, and this is from my personal experience and my personal journey. The whole thing that got me really into the nutrition was when I started doing CrossFit a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I don't want to scare anybody away by saying that, but...
I'm scared.
No, I'm scared, yes.
Okay. Right.
I'm scared sometimes too. But for the first time in my life, I paid attention to what I was putting in my body. But one of the first things I got pushed into was doing a paleo challenge. And honestly, like, it was probably the best thing that happened to me, because I remember one of my coaches running beside me going, are you feeling okay? And I was like, okay, just because I'm the last person to finish this workout, come on. And then I was like, I'm not going to tell her that there's a muffin in my purse right now. and so I, you know, I had to cut all of that stuff out, and I went, like, strict paleo, you know, like, just... stupidly.
Explain paleo to those who don't.
Ooh, so it's like eat nuts, seeds, meat, no like little carbs, no refined sugar, no grains, no legumes, no dairy.
That's paleo.
And it's very, there are still people that I think if you have an autoimmune disorder, it still might be a good guideline. And it's honestly, I use paleo type lists to kind of guide people, but I'm not, I think, like rice and beans and corn, I think that they're still whole foods. And while maybe they're not the best choice for everybody, I think they're a better choice than a lot of the stuff out there. But point being, I got into some really, I was like, well, no, that's a bad food. And I'm going to wait and I'm going to be really good all week. And then I'm going to binge on Friday nights. And so it took me years to really have a healthy relationship with food. And that's what I try to save my clients all of those years by just being like, hey, if you're going out to dinner with your family and they're here once a year or something, go eat. Don't be that weirdo who's like, ooh, I can't eat there because it's not all gluten-free. And, like, that's fine if you have celiac, but don't be that person, you know? Like, live your life.
What about, I hear a lot on some weight reduction programs and things that I read about intermittent fasting. Is that, where do you go with that?
So there's a lot of really good research on that. I kind of toyed with it. I feel like I've toyed with everything a little bit. Women have to be careful. It kind of messes with our hormones. I couldn't tell you the exact science behind that. I would reference you guys to The Primal Blueprint is a book that I really enjoyed. It's by Mark Sisson. He is a big keto person, actually, and he talks a lot about intermittent fasting. Those are two things that I don't recommend to clients because I'm just not qualified to do that. Quite frankly, I try to take the balanced approach. There's some great science there. I encourage everybody to look into it themselves and decide what they think, but I won't give you a yes or a no on that.
Yeah, there's some fascinating research about it.
It's very fascinating.
Out now, and it's kind of a new concept to many.
Well, actually, it's interesting. It's a very ancient one in the sense you think of it. The spiritual leaders over the eons have talked about, you know, fasting. In fact, like in the New Testament, the Christian Bible, it'll talk about they always go something in fasting, prayer and fasting, I think it is, that goes together. And then I know the Eastern religions have some things about that. So it's been around, but it's like everything else we're talking about could probably be grossly overused.
Yeah, for sure. And that's honestly, most people I talk to who ask about intermittent fasting, ask about keto, like, you don't just go into ketosis. Like, it is a highly regulated process, and you are checking daily to make sure that you're in ketosis. Like, it doesn't just happen.
Explain ketosis.
Oh, don't make me do that. So your body produces... this is going to be recorded. Your body produces ketones, which is... they basically treat them like another... it's like a fourth macronutrient. So you have proteins, carbs, fats, and then ketones. Mm-hmm. So your body learns how to use ketones for energy instead of everything else, and especially carbs, because you eat less than 20 grams of net carbs a day. And don't ask me about that one either. Okay. Again, I will reference you to that book because he has some really good information on it, but that's kind of the general idea of it.
And ketosis in and of itself doesn't sound good. Or is it?
So there are people, I'm not going to say it's good or bad. Yeah, okay. There are people that do it for years and they seem to do well on it. But you're eating a lot of fat, which again, for me and like advising people what to do, I'm not going to tell anybody to go eat that much fat. Like, it's going to come around and bite me in the butt.
That's one of my objections to it, is that there's so many studies showing that high incidence of fat intake could have some problems for us.
Yeah, and I just kind of think any extreme, I'm like, I'm going to land somewhere in the middle, personally. And if people, I think if you do your own research, there are, I want to say, I have heard that for Alzheimer's patients, almost like in a hospital setting, that's the kind of diet that they're recommending. Hmm. So the research, and even the research behind ketones, there's some really interesting stuff out there. Just as far as kind of the state that you're in and what's happening with all the chemicals and stuff. It's really interesting, but I'm not going for it.
No.
Well, the bottom line is that you've got nothing to lose by focusing your diet on research-backed inflammation-lowering foods. So here's a list of foods. Tell me about these, as I mentioned. Fish. Go fish.
I love fish. I think fish is great. We do fish every like Sunday night. Usually is our
once
fish
a week.
Night. The only thing about fish is just sourcing it. It's hard to get good fish, especially in Montana. But yeah, I think fish is a great source of protein.
Whether it's natural
healthy fats.
In a pond somewhere that they're feeding.
Yeah, go catch it yourself.
It recommends a salmon, mackerel, or sardines 2 to 4 times a week.
Oh yeah.
So, and you can use fresh or canned fish, but like Amy pointed out, you have to notice where the salmon comes from. So when it says wild-caught salmon, that's worth the difference in price.
I think so. I'm a big sustainability person, too, though. Yeah. And you have to watch out for stuff that they add in canned fish as well.
Yeah. And hopefully you can see on the ingredients that it's just tuna and water or oil.
Maybe salt.
A little bit of salt.
I would say be careful with the oils. Yeah. They might, like, you can get just tuna
salt. Yeah, they have it just in the water. And that's good stuff. Okay, so then they recommend pile up the produce, a rainbow of fruits and vegetables.
Yep, that's exactly what I tell people. Eat your rainbow. Whole foods in general, if there's not a label, it's a whole food, right? So that's a pretty good, I think a pretty safe bet. Some people will argue that, like we were talking about before the show, tomatoes being a nightshade are thought to be troublesome for people with chronic inflammation. I think of like autoimmune disorders. But for the general population, that's a whole food. We're doing the best we can.
Like, almost every vegetable and fruit should be included. Purple, pink, red,
and mix
green.
It up, too. There's a lot to be said for eating what's seasonally available. I know that we can get anything any time of year these days, but there's a lot of studies that show eating the stuff that's actually in season is much better for you.
How's watermelon?
Huh?
How
is watermelon?
And is it just another fruit or semi-vegetable or...
Oh, I mean, I think watermelon's not horrible.
Okay.
I think it's good.
Okay.
I think it's good. I was trying to think of, like, how many grams of sugar it has compared to some of the other ones, but I feel like it's not that high.
Okay.
I was trying to think.
It's preferable to a banana split. So.
Probably,
The banana might be all right.
The banana. Take the banana out.
Okay, so then this article says, build in some beans. It said... Some say that beans are not good for an anti-inflammatory diet, but they go on to point out that research recently has shown that beans, kidney beans, lentils, and more are rich in phytonutrients as well as fiber. And research shows they help rein in blood sugar. So try dipping veggies, those colorful veggies we mentioned, in a bean-based dip, like hummus, or throwing rinsed canned beans into a salad or soup for an instant fiber and phytonutrient boost. How do you feel about those suggestions, Amy?
I think, like I said, overall, it's a whole food. I think it's a good choice. Some of the paleo people that we were talking about kind of poo-poo beans and legumes in general because of some of the supposed stuff that's in them that blocks absorption of other nutrients. But I go back to, it's a whole food. It's better than something in a package. It does have tons of health benefits too. So I usually just tell people in moderation, you know, like don't have that be your only food for the day.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great choice.
Uh-huh. So the next one is a little bit controversial, I understand. Choose whole grains.
Yeah, and that, like, there's a whole other rabbit hole for the grains thing. I eat rice, I eat corn, I eat grains. They're not a huge staple in my diet, but a lot of it for me and some of the reading that I've done and the research that I've done is kind of the insulin spike. So they're just really high in carbs. And not necessarily a lot of other stuff, like white rice is, what else is really in it, you know?
Yeah.
So it really spikes those insulin levels. And then there's kind of the whole issue of how our grains are cultivated these days, which, like I said, whole nother rabbit hole. But generally speaking...
The unprocessed ones as much as possible.
Yeah, and even, like, you have to be careful because I think... whole grains, choose whole grains, but you see whole grain bread and it's still not whole grain bread. There's still 20 other ingredients that I would have to Google to figure out what they are. So that's not a whole grain to me.
Right. I mean, legitimate, authentic whole grains that you might use for your cooking or whatever, and they are hard to find. Might take a little effort, but I think it would be worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you feel about nuts?
Oh, I love nuts. Yeah, almond butter. Yeah, that's my jam every night with my dark chocolate.
And it should be pretty healthy.
Should be. I mean, you have the people that are scared of fat because of...
However, that's the healthy kind of fat that nourishes the body from what I've read.
It is,
and they recommend even that it... can reduce those problems, the unhealthy fats.
My problem with that is that I love almonds, I love walnuts, pecans, but my problem in that and everything else is, yeah, they say a cup or a half cup. I'll eat the whole thing in one setting.
I've divided it up into little packages now.
And that's so smart, pre-portioning things.
Well, if somebody has so many, but 10 of them,
Just one package.
Yeah.
So, this says to use olive oil, but you were saying that other oils might be more beneficial, like...
Well, so I use olive oil for cold stuff. So, like, salad dressings, I use... Because salad dressings, just for everyone to hear, are pretty horrible. They have lots of added garbage in them. So, I just like to do oil and vinegar. That's a safe bet. You know what's in it. So, olive oil I use for cold stuff. I don't heat olive oil because of the train of thought that when you heat it, it produces free radicals, which then, in part, kind of wreak havoc on your body over time. Whether it's... true or not, I've heard it enough to not go with it.
Yeah, when you went to Costco the other day, and a person at the checkout looked at some, I think, olive oil that you were getting, said, that is great. That's the kind, and I'm going, how is that different?
Well, this
was infused
with another helpful herb, fresh garlic.
Oh, and I saw that the other day.
It's good, yeah. They were saying, oh, that's yummy. So for your salad dressings, you don't have to haul out the garlic.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend that.
I almost accidentally bought that, but I was like, whoa, I don't need everything to taste like garlic.
Exactly. You need to keep both kinds of olive oil for those items that don't require garlic. I was just thinking, you said... for your cooking, what kind of oil would you then like? You said coconut oil?
Yeah, I use coconut oil for cooking and then baking a lot of times.
Okay.
And then avocado oil is another one that I like. But I use a lot of rendered fat from the meat that we cook.
Mm-hmm.
That weird person with the fat jar in the fridge.
That's okay. Well, now... there are certain spices and herbs that are very helpful with inflammation, according to this bit of research here.
Yeah, they probably know a lot more about it than I do.
Turmeric and cumin, add it to your scrambled eggs or tofu, and it is something that actually reduces inflammation.
Yeah.
So those are two good ones there.
And you can do, like, you can put turmeric in... drinks in the morning, too. You can make, like, a golden milk with it. A lot of coffee shops do golden milks now because it is supposed to have a lot of anti-inflammatory properties.
Which is a good thing to start getting used to.
What about dairy products?
Ooh, so that's such a hot... That's a controversial one. So we talked about how everyone is so different. People process things so differently. And actually, I think it might be... do they talk about dairy in your...
I think somewhere.
Yeah, I remember seeing it. But... not everybody has enough lactase to break down the lactose that we ingest. So a lot of people don't do well on dairy, but again, they don't realize it because they've never been off of it. And I was one of those. And when I went off of dairy, I was like, oh, like my skin looks better. I feel better. I'm not bloated all the time. And I was like, I didn't even know that this was an option. And I have so many people tell me that when they cut dairy out. Mm-hmm. So I say dairy, you just kind of have to try and figure it out yourself.
There's some great options now.
Such great options. Oh, I mean, the dairy-free alternatives, which coconut milk, canned coconut milk, is my favorite thing ever. So I don't really need...
let's throw one more in there, yogurt.
Again, you have to play with it.
Yeah.
I'm not a dairy. I don't do dairy. Mm-hmm. But we have Greek yogurt in the house, and it is eaten by everyone else. So, I think you just have to toy with it. There are some great benefits, obviously.
You need to read the sugar content, because some are so overloaded with sugar, and others are not. So
yes.
You can make a wise decision. I was going to say that the overall thing that in all the research I've read that we want to keep in mind is to avoid high sugar processed foods.
Yes.
High sugar or processed. And what do we mean by processed, Amy?
So anything that's been taken from its original state, and even put in a package? You know, like, is that process technically? I think if it has more than one ingredient on the label, it's, to me, that's considered processed.
So look for very low numbers of ingredients, like water, a little salt, that's okay. And you should be able to start reading things and you'll see immediately that some have 14 different things that you don't have any idea what they are listed.
Yes.
In long syllables of names.
When you say whole foods, you mean the way they're pulled off the original state. I mean, it's the way they were in a form that you could eat them.
Yeah, and just really, like, the biggest, one of the easiest things I tell people, shop the perimeter of the grocery store. Uh-huh. Those middle aisles have nothing but garbage. Like, just shop the perimeters. You have all of your produce, you have your meat, you have your eggs,
that's
you have your dairy. It is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we could get rid of the middle of most grocery stores.
There's a deli over there, too.
Yeah.
And
so,
the whole population would be healthier.
Oh, so much healthier.
But Amy, it's so easy to pick up a package and just add water and put it in the microwave.
Ramen noodles are like 10 for a dollar, right?
Exactly.
So, but here's the problem, too, because we're sitting here being like, why can't people make these choices? And I get frustrated sometimes in the grocery store. I'm like, why do you have that, all of that, in your cart? But that's what's affordable. Like,
that's a good
my
point.
Grocery bill every month?
That's a good point.
And unfortunately, we talk about this all the time, is one of the first line items to get cut out of your budget is food. Mm-hmm. And even growing up, it was always, okay, well, this is our grocery budget. And I'm like, I firmly believe that you pay for it now or you pay for it later. And mm-hmm. so I spend a lot of money on good quality food, but not everybody has that opportunity.
In fact, you hit a socio-political item. There is that when they say, what's the X number of percentage of kids are starving in America? What do they mean by that? Well, look, that kid has a lot of weight on him. But what they're saying is, I think, they don't have the money to buy the balance of foods in order to be healthy, and what they're eating actually leaves their body in a kind of starvation, if you will. So that's what I think a lot of people don't understand. What do you mean that person is listed in those percentages, but they don't have the money to buy anything except the sugar things? And the
sometimes they don't have access even to a grocery store in large urban areas. Well,
there is a condition.
Yeah. We spend the money when we ignore all of this good advice about eating on medicine and doctor's appointments and hospitalization and surgery and insulin if we don't spend it on good food up front.
Yeah, and that's a...
What would you were going to say?
What you were talking about is actually... I didn't realize it was happening as much in the States. It's very common amongst the kids in Africa, and there's a name for it, where their stomachs...
are bloated, but they're starving.
But it's because they're eating, I think all they get is, bread or something. Mm-hmm. I remember in our nutrition classes, that was one of the big conditions that we studied.
I want to add one mental health thing, guilt. We were hearing about what's good and what's not good, and things are individual. But, and this is with habits I try to break, or things I think I don't want to think, how does one stay on the wagon, if you will, of what's good for you? The one thing that I have found out through myself and the people that I've counseled is that if you get off the wagon, get right back on. I mean, so you didn't exercise for 3 days. All right? Then exercise.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it sounds so simple. It isn't. But I found the things that help get back on the wagon, like Suzanne and I try to go do this. The YMCA weightlifting class at 6:30 to 7:30 Tuesdays, Thursdays. We do most of the time. And I find that I do things in there I would never do by myself.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can be in a group, have a coach, somebody to counsel you in that, and to beat yourself up with guilt because you didn't do it, in my opinion, puts you further off from doing it right. Because you think, well, what's the use? I can't do it. All right.
Yeah.
Look at me. I'm not disciplined enough. Well, keep working on it. Don't ever quit trying, and then get help when you need it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, live in the now. Don't.
Mm-hmm. I didn't do it yesterday.
Yeah, don't think about all the pizza that you ate yesterday and then go do 3 workouts to punish yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the pizza, enjoy the pizza, move on. If you didn't work out for a week,
Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. And that is such a good point because, and I've personally struggled with that mm-hmm. a lot. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit here and think for 30 minutes if I should eat this cookie. And I'm like, wow, that is like, that is not healthy. Just eat the cookie and move on with your life, right? So, and it's taken me a long time. And same thing with working out. Now I go on vacation and I'm like, who cares if I miss some time? I'm going to enjoy my vacation mm-hmm. and get back to it when I'm back.
Yeah, there's always tomorrow. We can't change yesterday, but we can certainly look forward to tomorrow. And we want to thank you so much, Amy, for coming with us tonight. And we're all going to remember to brush and floss for our Miss Amy here and for ourselves. And we want to say that you're welcome to contact the station, KGVM, and we're also on .org.
Well, yeah, there's also, for those of you who listen, is that there are programs you won't be able to hear on Monday night from 7 to 8, but you can go to kgvm.org. There's a kind of a podcast archive in which you can look at all the past programs, most of them, and be able to listen to them. And so there are things on there that we've gone over about a wide array of mental health and physical issues, everything from migraine headaches to the dental hygiene, nutrition, suicide, it goes on and on and on. So in the final minute that we have, minute and a half, what would we add that you, what would you want people to remember from this program?
Biggest takeaway in 90 seconds, it's everything. It's everything combined, overall health. Don't ignore anything. And as far as food choices and nutrition goes, keep it simple. 5 ingredients or less on a label is probably a better choice. If you can't pronounce it or you have to Google it, put it back on the shelf. Shop the perimeter of the store and go from there.
Those are excellent. I like that it's so functional.
Yeah.
And doable. Yeah. Any of us could follow that wonderful advice, and we should.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Suzanne, what will we change in our process of living here as a result of this meeting tonight?
Well, let me think. I'm going to feed you spinach when we get
home. And a cookie.
There you go. Spinach and a cookie.
Well, I don't happen to have any cookies, I'm happy to report. But I will point out that you mentioned that over 30 years that you had those sleeping differences. Mm-hmm. It's actually longer than that, Arliss. We've been married 52 years now.
Whoops. Oh, there it is.
So that's our parting shot. That was so funny.
Well, thank you for listening tonight to KGVM Health and Happiness. And keep listening on Monday evenings. And we'd like to have you back again. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me, guys.